Diva Call the Gael is 40 Degrees Sports Line on Scariff Bay Community Radio. Good afternoon, everyone. You're welcome once again to Sports Line Show here on Scariff Bay Community Radio in association with Dell Credit Union on 88.3 FM and 92.7 FM and on the Ninja TuneIn app. I'm joined, as always, today on the show by co-presenter Pat McNamara. And we have two important occasions to talk about on this week's show. And first of all, we're talking about a memorial match which is going to take place in Waikiki Airfield tomorrow at 4 p.m. A match that involving four teams of Clare, Scariff Community College, UL, and of course the host club Waikit, of whom the late Michael Hines, who the match is in memory of, was part of and played for the four teams in times gone by. And we are delighted to be joined by his mother, Annette Hines, and his aunt, Yvonne Hines Fitzmaurice. And we're also joined by Cathy Culgoom Kelleher from Bodaig, who is a member of Limerick Suicide Watch, where the funds and any donations from tomorrow's game will be going to. Fáil to go, Leo.
Thank you, Leo.
Yvonne, look at, first of all, we start with you. It's a poignant moment, there's no doubt, and you know, but look, tomorrow, the game, the whole day with mess is 11 o'clock, and then the match at 4, in memory of a great young man.
A great young man, yeah, the best of all of us, there's no doubt. And we're delighted to be able to honour his contribution to hurling in this way.
And look, there's no doubt, we all know, and Pat, you'll come in on this as well. We were blessed to see this man's talents. Oh. You know, he was an artist with a stick. It was like a wand he had, to be fair to him. And, you know, played for, in it, four teams, as we mentioned in the introduction. You might tell us a small bit about him.
Sure. Michael's played at Whitegate since he was able to pick up early. And then he played for Scariff Community College. He won an All-Ireland with Scariff Community College. He captained the team when he was in his leaving cert year. He also played with Clare development squad from 14 up to under 16. And then the year that he died, he actually won an All-Ireland with UL under Adrian Murphy, and he got man of the match that day. My God, it was horrendous. They talk about rain. It was,
it was
unbelievable, the conditions that they had to play in. He actually came off the field. He didn't take off any gear. He went straight into the shower. He said it was so cold. But yeah, Michael loved his hurling.
Look at, as you know, Yvonne, in East Clare, and look at, especially in Waikit, and if you're not involved in the sport, you don't, it's like all communities, it's the base of every community.
It absolutely is, and I think Terence said it very well in his eulogy. He said it was Michael's craft, and he really owned it, and he was in the field as often as he could be, and he played handball as well to develop his hand-eye coordination.
And won All-Irelands.
He was an exceptional sportsman and individual as a person as well. So there's a lot to be missed.
A lot to be missed. And however, you know, as you said, a lot to be missed. And unfortunately, you know, one of the, Michael, he had an illness, Yvonne.
He had an illness, and he did all the right things. He asked for help and got it and talked to everyone, and which we encourage amongst everyone silence is not a good thing when you have a mental illness. He did all the right things, but unfortunately it overcame him, and we are where we are now. It's a terrible tragedy for everyone, for his family and his friends, of whom he had many, many, many friends, and his teammates and his community and everyone he has left behind.
Yeah, talking about the friends, I just saw Michael hurling quite a few times, and again, I was so impressed by his beautiful style, beautiful skills, everything, and you know, he stood out for you. But I know how popular he was from Flagmount to Killeen away. Anyway, I know a number of people just loved him, and he was very, very popular, extremely popular, and we liked. I haven't heard that before anything happened, you know. So it's wonderful that there's a commemoration there, first of all. But just to say that our memories of him are all so positive, and everyone spoke so well of him, and I suppose the fact that he looked for help and got it, as you said, is kind of good, at least that you know things were tried to help as much as possible. But it's wonderful. Look, it deserves to be commemorated. like this, and I think just inviting teams to play it for is a brilliant, brilliant idea, and we wish them very success tomorrow with it.
Yeah, and where did the idea in it of the game come up? Where did it emerge?
Well, this idea of bringing the four teams together, it was Declan's idea. He thought, you know, for the lads themselves, do you know what I mean? For them, I know for sure, definitely the UL lads anyway, they sort of wanted to come together, to bring them all together, I suppose, all the lads that he played with all up through his short life. So it was Declan's idea.
Yeah,
you know, he just thought it would be a lovely thing.
The support has been tremendous from everyone and all the lads. People have made time when they don't have time, and they've asked for permission to play when maybe they're not supposed to, and so on. But they're all coming, and even as you said earlier, we have a fundraiser for Limerick Suicide Watch, and the support so far online has been extraordinary. And there's no doubt that there's people want to do this. They want to remember Michael, but also they want to acknowledge, you know, that help is needed and help funds are needed for this cause, and they're out there and they're willing to give, and that's great.
And you can see by the four teams, and look at Michael, the one team, Michael, it was never about himself, it was always about the team and about others. You know, as again, you quote Terence Fahey, and I always remember the point that Terence came from the eulogy that they looked at. Michael, the last man he talked about was himself. It was always about everyone else. He was a real team player, Yvonne.
Oh, a real team player, and he gave it all. He kept going at hurling even when he didn't feel his best, because he didn't want to let the team down or his teammates or his friends or his college friends or anything. It was always about other people. And perhaps that's testament to him, I think. And he
showed, you know, even in that short life, and look, he was in turmoil, there's no doubt about that. But to have the willpower to go out and display his talents in front of, you know, big crowds and in front of many, many people, you know, and a lot of critics as well, you know. But where, you know, how did he get the willpower? Where did he get the willpower? And he gone through turmoil to go out and produce performances of the highest quality time and time again.
I don't know. I mean, there was days where we didn't think he'd be able to go, but he did, because just basically like that, he didn't want to let anyone down, you know. And when he got on the field, he did what he was supposed to be doing on the field, and that was it. But it took a lot of courage. There was days it took a lot of courage for him to go out there, but when he did, he didn't let anyone down.
He was a great man for focus and for digging deep when it needed it, and he gave it his all every single time.
And I suppose most people watching games that time wouldn't have known the struggle he had to get on the pitch. And I wouldn't have known it, for instance, as most people didn't. But I suppose maybe thinking about going and having to organise to go was the hardest part. Maybe once he got on the pitch, he probably
and Cathy will talk about this.
Yeah,
she gave a series of talks and why get there on mental health and nutrition and so on. But, you know, the importance of sport and activity and being together with people that you, your friends, community, and so on is very, very important. And it sustained him
on many days as well.
You know. Mm-hmm. But mental illness is a serious illness. It's as serious as cancer or anything, and it can't be underestimated. So,
And Cathy, you know, mental illness is known as the silent killer, you know, and it is, you know, an illness that I don't think gets the time for people to talk about it, because the only way is you have to talk.
Yeah.
And communication is key.
Yeah, so with Limerick Suicide Watch, I suppose the primary goal for us is we patrol the area in around the river and the bridges in Limerick City to see if we can identify people in distress or people who may be actively contemplating suicide. But we'll also meet people who may come maybe looking for help and to want to speak to these strangers, because they feel, they know that we're there, they know we're out and patrolling, because they feel that they can't maybe open up to their friends and family. And so many times I've had somebody say, if my friends or my husband or my wife or my children or colleagues knew I was sitting here telling you this or speaking to you about this now, they'd be absolutely shocked, because people can hide it so well. If you had a broken leg or somebody is ill, as Yvonne said, with cancer, you tend to see the physical signs, but a lot of people can put up a front or a mask. So I think it's something that's very important not to underestimate, because it can affect everybody and anybody. There's no kind of those marginalised groups or type of person that can be impacted with their mental health. So you have to, I suppose, be open-minded first and foremost, because what you see is not always the reality for a lot of people, what's going on behind the scenes. As a part, I suppose, the work that we do as well, so the secondary kind of EM that we kind of are involved with is to open those conversations about mental health and to, I suppose, to create to talk about suicide and create awareness around it, so the people know that there is supports out there if needed, and to encourage people to talk to a friend, a family member, professionals, voluntary organisations, depend what they feel most comfortable with at that time, but also just to get the conversations there, that there's no stigma associated with the word suicide, or that somebody I'm suffering with their mental health, that it's something that people should be ashamed or embarrassed about, because it's not. It's not, unfortunately.
Yeah. And Camille, in your work, Cathy, I know you do great work inside in Limerick and around, you know, it's a talent that you have, you know, that I don't think I'd be able to do it anyway. There's no doubt about that. You have to be very strong-willed and minded yourself.
I didn't think I would be able to do it either, to be honest, but you'd be surprised. First I've been volunteering with Limerick Suicide Watch around approximately about 4 years. So I was doing it for about 2 years before any of this happened, before Michael passed away. And I suppose it's made me more determined to keep going out and doing it. But the reality is, 2022, our group had 116 what we call interventions or incidents of people that were in distress, suffering badly with their mental health, or actively contemplating suicide, or had attempted it even maybe in that day, or had been planning to attempt it while we were out on patrol. And that number, unfortunately, since from 2022 till 2023, the number did increase with the interventions and interactions that we had in that following year. And so far, it's anticipated that the numbers will be in and around the same this year or potentially higher again. So that just shows you the need to have, I suppose, those supports in place, because that's potentially 122 families from last that have their loved ones still safe and well, and maybe has gone out and seek support or had the professional help that they needed. I know in Michael's case, he was very open about it and they had did everything right, but we'd often meet people that have never sought support, never sought help, never spoken to anybody about it. And just talking to us and having that interaction or that chat, depending what the case may be, it might be just the catalyst for them to say, right, I'm going to tell my friend now, or we might speak to a family member who'll come and get them, or if needed, if it's quite a serious situation, we'll get professional, we'll call the services if they need an ambulance, if it's a crisis incident, and they'll be brought into the hospital to see the psychiatric team and be assessed, and they'll take it further from there.
Yeah, and you mentioned that the increasing numbers there as the years go on. So two questions. First of all, can you and your colleagues identify any perceived reason why it's been growing, first of all? And secondly, is it just important that you'd be able to listen, like Leo correctly, and I would be saying, wouldn't know what to do or say or how to go about it, but is it just the listening is for them to talk to you is the most important part of it?
That's a huge part. Well, firstly, there's no typical person. You would meet people, and there is, I suppose, common themes that addictions could be an issue. Some person may have had a specific trauma, a bereavement, job loss, but not always. We have some people and say, I'm suffering and I don't have a reason. Yeah. So they're mentally ill and they're suffering with their mental health. So we do, so whenever we, somebody inquires about joining Limerick Suicide Watch and if they be accepted in, they, you're brought in as a probationer and you do probation for 3 months, but we do do training alongside our patrols. So we do do training, a 2-day course called ASSIST, it's like suicide intervention training. So that's based, it's like a worldwide program and it's based on research and to kind of give us the tools of how to approach the situation, what questions to ask. But active listening is such a huge thing. It's just to let the person tell their story and maybe not say anything and not to have a solution because we can't solve their problems. We can advise and say, well, these are the potential supports available to you or give them ideas of what potentially may help. But it's just to let them share what they need to share and offload that. That would be a big
and
part
Katie,
of
when,
it.
You know, when a normal night inside with yourselves, obviously, I don't know what numbers you go around together in patrol, because Limerick, there's a vast area in Limerick to be where you're based to be covered. How do you control and manage the area on any given night?
So, like, so we'd always break up into at least 2, 3 to 4 teams, depending how many volunteers are out that particular night. But we do foot patrol, we have a van, a patrol van, and we also have bikes, electric bikes as well. So it means that we can cover, we do have a set kind of area that we tend to kind of cover and we'll break up the teams so to make sure that there's at least one team present at different sides of the river. And if you're on one side, you can view across to the other side so that those areas are covered. And if need be, then we do have the van if we have to move somewhere very, very quickly, if we won't make it in time on our foot. And we do have the electric bikes, which are a brilliant addition. So that's, they be everything that we have, all our equipment and our transport, that all is solely, we only have it due to fundraising because we're not supported by any government. We don't.
I was just going to ask you that, you know, for the amount of work you do, and it's great work, there's no doubt about that. Is there any support at all? Is everything that year, but is it all voluntary? Everything donation, all donations?
Everything is voluntary. So all that, we are obviously volunteers and we obviously don't take payments. We do this just to give up our time to help people in need. But all our funds come directly from events such as this match. Yvonne did an event herself a few years ago where she did a sponsored walk and hike. What was it? How many? 100K in the month.
She said anyway.
And she fundraised for that. Sponsorship. But everything is, the public are so, so generous and we're so well supported, which I think highlights how many people are impacted by their mental health, in whether it's themselves directly or indirectly through friends and family, that they're willing to.
Yeah, so the voluntary and the fundraising part obviously is vital. So tomorrow's games, then, the awareness of the fact that it's, first of all, in memory of Mike and the hurling and the enjoyment of it and all of that and the friendships, but also the money is very, very important for you, what you're doing. So I suppose it's important to get it out there that it is a fundraiser as well, and also that it's just, you're the Limerick, it's separate to all national other towns or cities. The Limerick Suicide Watch is specifically its own fundraiser.
Yes,
it's not a national.
No,
yeah.
we're just one group, one charity.
But you're separate to others, yeah.
Yes, so we're totally independent.
Yeah, and just kind of getting it out there for our listeners that how important it is to be able to, and they can contribute online, girls, I'm sure.
Yeah, there's an I Donate page. It's listed on Facebook and Instagram, and I know all the younger members of the community are sharing it everywhere in Australia and so on. Everywhere we've had massive amount of contributions so far. And I just want to add to Cathy, it's not just the volunteers that go out, it's everyone on the executive in the Limerick Suicide Watch are volunteers. There's nobody getting paid in this organisation at all.
No.
So it's separate to bigger charities that we may all see ads for on the radio or hear, you know, those.
It's separate to those ones. This is a small scale individual volunteers.
And Cathy goes out a couple of nights for the whole night during a month. So, and you know, she has family herself and so on. So this is Trojan work and not easy to do because you don't know what situation you're going to come across. And she shared some stories with me and they're very poignant.
Yeah, and obviously
with some young people, not just young people, but anyway, any age.
Oh, so it's every age group that we've dealt with, young, old, And I suppose with the committee are incredible. So there's roughly about 70 volunteers in the group, but not all the volunteers patrol. The majority of the volunteers
Would you have a control base?
We have a base. So at the moment, the base, we are leasing the base. It's just slightly up from the river. I don't know if you know where Tate's Clock is.
I do, yeah.
Yeah,
do,
we're based in there. And so that's where we keep all our equipment, our gear. We have safety gear that we need just in case the worst case scenario happened. One of us ended up in the water. We have our own personal safety gear. We have, as I said, the transporter van, our electric bikes and standard bikes. We also have their motorized, they're called hover arcs, so they're like motorized life buoys. Yeah. So if somebody happens to go into the water and we don't get to them in time, then we have these motorized life buoys that we can throw in, and they're really quick. And so we're trained up on that to get to that person. And also there's alerts on them that make sure that we can keep an eye on them, and there's lights so that we don't lose them in the water. But thankfully I've never had to use them, but I have the training done if need be. But the long-term goal is for Limerick Suicide Watch is we want to purchase our own permanent base, ideally closer to the river. And I suppose the goals are in relation to that is, firstly, that we know that that's our permanent centre and that will always be there. But also, potentially, if a family, if some person's loved one has ended up in the river and they're waiting for them to be found and the marine search and rescue are out looking for them, that the family and friends have somewhere to go that's safe and warm, and we can bring in our own, again, voluntary counsellors if needed to talk to them, support them, and they can kind of base themselves there, because there is nowhere at the moment. And I suppose even further down the line, whenever it happens, is that we'll also have other services like counsellor rooms, etc., in as well that people can utilise. So at the moment, we do have our own kind of counselling service that is connected with Limerick, specifically with Limerick Suicide Watch. It's our own individual counselling service. So, for example, if I was to meet somebody out on patrol and we kind of chatted to them, we have our counselling service called Connect. We issue them with a card with the phone number kind of for the person who coordinates it. And there's no pressure, but it's like if you need to feel that you need that extra support, or you want to take another step, or you're having a bad day, and you can reach out and contact this number, and then they'll make arrangements with that person to come into our current base and meet one of the counsellors.
And for yourselves then, Cathy, is there ever a night going out that you wouldn't meet someone? You know, would there be an issue every night?
No, thank God. No.
Just another one. What body provides your training for these equipments and the other things you do? Who trains you?
So we do training with the HSE. We do different like first aid, DFib, CPR training. That's an independent company. So some of the fundraising will cover the costs of that training. We do training with Marine Search and Rescue. Sometimes we have done stuff with the Coast Guard as well. And then we do ligature training, and they're kind of some of the main ones that we would do. Some like the search and rescue, they're a voluntary organisation as well. So,
at least your training definitely sounds like they're from bodies and groups who know exactly what they're doing, because they're highly trained themselves.
And
that's good.
We do like at the end of the day, we're volunteers, we're not professionals. So if we'd never hesitate to call the services, if we need assistance from the guards, the ambulance, the fire, the fire service, the Coast Guard, we've automatic access to them, and we'll contact them straight away if we need that extra support.
Yvonne, you know, this year, 2024, or this day and age, isn't it amazing that such an organisation or any organisation like that have to depend on voluntary contributions to provide the services, you know, that, you know, people are paying taxes and everything every year, until you have to go and depend on public donations or donations from people to keep these valuable services going.
I know, they're extraordinary people, the people who go out, and the water isn't always warm, I'm sure, Cathy, either in December or January when you're having to go into the Shannon to help somebody in distress. Yeah, it is extraordinary, but you'd hope that the more awareness we can bring you know, that the people in authority would take notice of the fact that mental illness and mental health and the tragedy that is suicide that we hear about and touches so many families in this country is treated as seriously as it should be, and as seriously as triple checks for cancer or whatever it is. It's not something that can be avoided, and it's something that schools and universities and children from primary school up have to be aware of, the need to mind themselves and their mental health, and families need to be open and honest and talk about things that happen or feelings that people may have, because mental illness loves a bit of silence, and it fosters and it grows and it festers, and it doesn't always end well.
And yes, look, you were very open about Michael's illness as always, and you done everything possible, you know, to help him. Do you think that there should be more done or more spoke about in the schools, you know, to enlighten people? Do you think there's enough being done, you know, because there's no doubt there's a lot of young people out there in turmoil, you know, and or maybe, as you said, are afraid maybe to reach out.
Absolutely. And the thing about Michael's illness, it started when he was very young. He was 15, like, so these are the times. Yeah. And like, since Michael got ill, like, we've heard horrendous stories about even younger children. So it starts very young, you know. Yeah. And it should be something that should be talked about in our schools, in our communities, in our, you know. Okay. It's something that we should be encouraging our children to speak about if they're not feeling well, you know. And we should be encouraging our young people to be careful about what they say to other young people.
Because I think that's probably one of the most important points that has been made, you know, since we started here tonight, like, is, you know, you have to take it as a time to think. And I also think, you know, there's a song that Celine Dion had heard before, think twice. You should, you know, in this day and age, and especially with social media, Cathy, as well, you have to think, you know, what's gone up. It's done untold damage.
Well, also, I remember in primary school, we learned a few years ago that children in primary age do get, and it's right, can get depressed. We often associate with adults in their 20s or maybe older even. But I suppose, you know, you hear discussions on radios, there are national radio stations and TV often about mental health and politicians and others. There's a fair bit of lip service paid too, but there isn't anything. There are some of the SPHE and that in primary schools, but it's a bit of a help. But first of all, teaching kids that they need to talk to people, and secondly, teaching people to be kind to each other at all times is so vital, as Annette said as well. And, you know, education always helps, I think, if it starts there. And I think more and more should be done at that level.
And I think to seek out support, you know, there's mental health, which is, and there's lots of online coaches and people who'll tell you to go for long walks and things, but it can slip into mental illness, and that's when you have to get medical help and seek out support and push and push and push as much as you can, because it doesn't get better on its own. And as Annette very well said, you know, the words from other people can really dig into a person's head, and especially a young person. And with sport and everything, even a comment on the line about someone's appearance or game or whatever it is, they might be able to take it on the surface of it, but it could fester inside of them when they go home, and they might not say anything. And it hurts. It can hurt an adult, but it hurts a child 20 times worse. Yeah. And a child is a child until they're 18.
And Ketty, it's only something very, very small can trigger it, doesn't, you know?
It could be an accumulation of small little things, and it could be just that one day, that one comment, that one thing that could send that person into, I suppose we call it distress, that they need to actively seek out support. But as a part of, I suppose, the voluntary work that Limerick Suicide Watch do as well, we do offer outreach services. So that would mean we would go into companies, colleges and schools to talk about mental health, suicide and awareness, and promote, I suppose, talking positively about mental health, but also the importance of speaking about it. But it's only when we're invited that we will go. A company, a school or college will reach out and say, would you mind coming in to do a talk? So maybe something has happened that maybe in that company, maybe somebody has spoken to people higher above about the need to have more support, or somebody that might have known people that have passed away from suicide, and they've taken that kind of proactive approach. But there's no, I suppose, that I'm aware of, I could be wrong, but there's no programmes in place that should be compulsory, that is kind of standardised across organisations, schools and colleges. It's up to the individual place to kind of take it upon themselves
and
to do something.
You know, from your experience, Katie, and as you look at your covering Limerick, and like we are out here in East Clare, and I'm not aware of any services that are available out this side, should there be some kind of a sister group towards yourselves, you know, that where people can talk out here? You know, I know they have, you have the HSE and all that, but you know, where is there a point of contact for people? You know, people, is not everyone that people go and talk to.
So there is a group in Ennis, they're called the Haven Hub. So we've one in Limerick and there's one in Ennis. So they're like based in an office. I don't know exactly where the address is, unfortunately, but I can find out where people, if they are, want to go in and speak to somebody, that they do have certain hours that they can go in. But I know we are, our group specifically covers the Limerick City Riverside area, but our outreach services will come into Clare. We'll go into Tipperary if need be. So we will have volunteers present on tomorrow at the match, and we will be offering an outreach service just in case there is anybody there that does want to speak to somebody. And it's all done very discreetly if needed.
All in confidence.
Yes. You just don't know, like, just to have that kind of, I suppose, presence there. We won't be in your face by any way means. You'll just notice the orange jackets. But if somebody does, or just take a card, even if they want to follow up at a later stage, that will be there.
There's a lovely group as well. They swim in Spanish Point. We've been up a few times in the cold. A lady called June Curtin from Spanish Point, who does swims every morning at 9:30, and she's one of the nicest people any of us have ever met. I could say she's had her own bereavement, and if anyone ever needed someone very nice to talk to, and you wanted to wander up to Spanish Point any morning, she's there and she'll talk to you for as long as you need. She's a lovely woman, takes no money, takes nothing. She's just, and she has her own little group there.
And Katie as well, I presume, you know, obviously when the event is done and, you know, these people are gone to the reward, and there's families, you know, who are grieving and will always grieve. Do you offer support to those families as well?
That's not something we don't offer, no. We're kind of more an acute service.
Is that for professionals?
Prevention.
Prevention, and there, we don't really have a follow-up as such, which I find it suits me, because I think it'd be even harder. I wouldn't be able to go out and do patrols if you had this connection with a person.
Yeah, okay.
So we deal with the person, and we, within the team, we all together decide what is the best approach, what's the best course of action to take here and then. But once that person either goes back to their family or friends, or maybe into the hospital, or the guards take them to kind of look after them if need be for their own safety, we don't find out what happens in that case, because you have to be able to park it, because I wouldn't be able to do it. You'd be worrying about every person. Can't have that. It's connect. If you get emotionally involved or any bit of connection, it makes it, it's already hard to do, but it makes it an awful lot worse. So
But there are support groups for grieving families that have been bereaved by suicide. You know, there's a support group called HUG, and there's also our own Clare bereavement support group in Ennis as well. You know, so they're kind of different. They're different groups that deal with, you know, like the people who are bereaved after. Yeah. You know,
and Pieta House as well offer a
Pieta House offer counselling as well. So so they're, you know, I've been in been in contact with these people, you know, and they're very good. And again, HUG is, and the clear bereavement. They're completely voluntary. They're just people themselves who have been bereaved by suicide.
Yeah.
And they're just given their time, you know, to help, you know, because they kind of know where you are, you know, they've been through it, you know, and yeah, those places that you can go, and they're widely advertised.
Mm. Because it's a unique kind of grief as well. Those people have an insight into the depth and the circumstances of a person's death, which is kind of different to other deaths, really. The circumstances change the people that are left behind. So it's good to talk to people who kind of know how you feel.
And Yvonne, to go back to, you know, to this game tomorrow, and even listening to Katie there, you know, people should definitely support this, and even in more ways than one, and maybe by even asking maybe to join as a volunteer.
Absolutely,
inside, you know, it isn't all about money either, even though I know
you're paying. I think just if we can get the message across, not only if whatever they can afford, if they can, but to come along anyway, if they're feeling in any way down or anything, they'll have someone to talk to. It'll be a great way to get together with the community. We're tremendously thankful to everyone who's supported us in organising this. But it is important to acknowledge that, you know, suicide happens, that we need to talk about it as a community, locally, nationally, internationally, because it's not going anywhere. Kathy said the numbers are rising of people in distress, and the only way we're going to help prevent this is by opening up about it and not being afraid to say the words.
Yeah, and come here. I know, as you said, you want to thank an awful lot of people. And again, you know, you have the four teams tomorrow: Clare, UL, Scariff Community College, and Wycott. And look at us.
We'll say a special thanks to Tommy Guilfoyle, who's helping out with the Clare team that Michael played with. Adrian Murphy, who's helping out with the UL Wolves team that Michael played with in 2022 and before that, indeed. Shawnee Mack from Scariff Community College for the 2018 All Ireland team. He's bringing them all back. And of course, Niall Hayes from Wycott, who's managing the senior team there. So, I mean, without their support, this wouldn't have happened. And obviously, we've had to change the date as well, and they've been tremendously helpful in accommodating that because there's another match, I think, tonight.
Yeah, there's a small member of the match in Thomas later on this evening.
But anyway, I said that there would be no better club than Wycott. I'd say none of the people down there too, as well as the other obviously groups, but Wycott would always be such a wonderful club, and so we always praise them for being, you know, how we like to call it the home of hurling. The home of hurling. We'll accept that from the program.
And if also, and Annette, there's no doubt you want to thank the local community of Wycott, who, you know, have been brilliant to you in your grief in the last number of years.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we need our community. You know, we need the people in our community. So they've been very supportive. You know, also with, you know, the Darkness Into Light that we started, and we're now an official walk.
Yeah.
Darkness Into Light. So with that too, like, they've been huge. The Parliament Club have given up their amenities, you know, for us to use, you know, for that as well. So that
could be taking place on the 11th of May as well. And, you know, we had tremendous numbers in the last couple of years, and we'd hope that people can come, because it is a walk of hope, and it's a lovely walk. It's a 5K walk, and it's lovely along by the river and everything, and it gives people an opportunity to talk to people maybe that they haven't met in a while. It's a real gathering. I know we came on here last year and talked about it as well, and it is a real gathering. But the community, not just in Wycott and Mount Shannon, but in fairness all over East Clare and Clare beyond, because Michael touched a lot of people between his hurling but also his college life and his work life in Sintra and everything, and thousands of people have been in contact with us and have such good memories and shared them, and that has been incredibly important to us as a family.
And as you speak of his work life, you know, he worked in Sintra for many, many years, and he was like a counsellor himself there. He, you know, you'd always ask Michael a question, but he turned, and I always remember Terence Fahey in his speech, you know, he turned it back on top of you. But, and then, like, I see older people, everyone loved him. He was like a counsellor to a lot of those people. They were going in to see him as well as do the bit of shopping as well, you know. And
yeah, if they only had a box of matches, he'd carry it out.
He liked to come out for the fresh air, any excuse to get out, you know. And of course, he was often down the back watching matches in the QT as well. But anyway,
and in the front.
A tremendous young man, and look at and Austin, he's gone. May he rest in peace. He's gone to eternal reward. Ketty, finally, for you and your work. Your work is ongoing.
There was patrol 365 days a year, Christmas night, New Year's night. There's storm, red storm warnings. There's somebody, one of our group will be out patrolling the river. And I suppose I'd like to, on behalf of Limerick Suicide Watch, thank the Hines family, the community of Whitegate, and all the players and management involved in getting these teams together to do this for us, because it's always very humbling for us to, whenever Annette rang me to tell me about it, I was kind of like, I suppose there's a pride that people are thinking of Limerick Suicide Watch and want to support it and do that for us, but it's just very sad at the same time that a group like us is needed. And even though we're based in Limerick, we meet people from all over Ireland on our patrols and all over the world. People from every county. We've met people from nearly every county in Ireland at some stage, and from much, much further afield. Yeah.
It knows no boundaries, does it?
No.
No.
And Limerick, of course, is a university town, so it has a lot of students.
Yes.
And look, you'd be looking for as much support as possible. And Yvonne, look, as you said, you've already said the support has been brilliant, and long may it continue. Pat, we've come to the end of our section here now, and look, it is as we said at the beginning, it is suicide is the silent killer. We've got a feed here, you know, from people who have been affected deeply, and of course Cathy, who is working very, very closely. It is something that will be coming up for discussion more and more again, and look, as much help as possible is needed.
Yeah, look, we've touched on maybe problems that young people have, you know, through our sports programs before, but to hear Annette and Yvonne there, you know, who have gone through so much, and to hear them speak so brilliantly, and you know, so willing to help others, and then to hear Cathy's outstanding group in Limerick, so it's been an education for me, and it's just brilliant, and I just wish them every success, and I hope, you know, that I suppose Michael's memory of being loved so much by everybody will be a driving force to help them to cope as time goes on. But I hope tomorrow is a brilliant day anyway, so it was wonderful to be here with them.
Yeah, and I hope you get some solace from tomorrow, you know, to continue the grieving process, and you know, to work your way through it. Also, before you go, we have to wish you and Terence and all the under-20s the very best of luck as you embark on the Munster hurling campaign in the very near future. I know you're part of the backroom team, and it.
Thank you.
Yvonne and Cathy, thanks a million for coming in to talk to us here.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
And that concludes our Sportsline Show Part 1 here today on Scariff Bay Community Radio on Sportsline on 88.3 FM and 92.7 FM in association with Dale Credit Union. Once again, thanks to my co-presenter, Pat McNamara, and thanks to our guests, Annette Hines, Yvonne Hines Fitzmaurice, and Cathy Culboom Kelleher. And once again, we wish them all the very best of luck with that match and their fundraising efforts in Whitegate tomorrow. Please come back and join us for part two at 3 o'clock, where we're going to preview this evening's National Hurling League final between Clare and Kilkenny with our guest analyst, Mr. Danny Chaplin.